Welcome to Chronicles of Ghanessi, Curse of the Green Sea. We're a Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition podcast about six adventurers who are trying to stop the Realm Eater, Amira, from destroying the world. And I'm Addison Bell. I play Clucian Trailbreaker, the tracker and ranger bug guy of the group. And my fun fact for you today is that when Clucian was just a very, very young boy, he only got to do this a couple of times with his father, but he went hunting with his father. His dad was teaching him to only take what you need and to be very careful about where you aim and things like that, as one does. And he told him to shoot at one of the deer, a bigger buck, and he missed. But he hit a much smaller one and killed it. And he still carries around one of its little prongs in a pocket on his pants as a reminder to only take what you need and don't miss.
Wow.
And from then on, he taught his bugs to shoot for him.
Therefore alleviating him of any guilt.
So now he only has to remember to only take what you need.
My name is Tara Metallet, and I play
Morgan.
Play Morgan Mendez. I wondered who was going to be
really
the first
in character
one to do it.
Tonight.
What?
You're just really in character. You're doing great.
It's fine. You're good.
Your name was Dara.
And you play.
And you play Morgan.
We'll all do it. Don't worry.
I can't.
All of us at some
I'll
point.
Redo it.
Nope, it's staying in.
No, it's canon.
Hey, then everyone has to do that.
Yep.
At some point.
At some point, we'll all end up doing it.
And I. How do I even start with that?
Just start over.
I was like, because I can't. Hi, my name is Morgan Mendez, and I play Dara Metallet, the druid cleric of Naramis. And my fun fact for this week is that Dara has definitely been messing around with their staff that they got a long time ago, customizing things to look a little more like themselves, made out of metal and wood. And it seems to be appearing more that way every day as they tinker with it.
Hey guys, I'm Avery, and I play as Quill Bernhardt. My fun trivia fact for the week is that I'm sitting here getting confused because of the name. Fun fact for the week is that Quill actually created a 5-star meal back in Redford when we were all staying between Gavik, Dara, and himself. Just, I think it. Estiel was there as well, but yeah, he created mutton chops and a bunch of other sides and whatnot, and rolled a 27 and created a 5-star meal.
Hi, I'm Chase Ebling, and I play Estiel de Taurus, because I was skipped, a human sorcerer. And my fun fact for this week is that when Estiel was young, he spent a lot of time taking care of the flowers and herbs in the Lyceum. And it was there that he fell in love for the first time, and for the only time.
Okay, damn. To follow that up, my name is Coleman Winger. Hello, everybody. And I play the Mizoku fighter, Orofarne. My fact about Orofarne for this week is that when he was in his early teens, he and his best friend Bantu ran away from home, and they built a shack out on the beach of their island that they lived on, and that's where they lived the rest of their lives until they eventually grew up and decided to have a career.
Nice. My name is Marshall, and I am the Dungeon Master. My fun fact this week is that the Watchers that you met last week were originally meant to be very aggressive, murderous shadow-like beings, but then due to the party's insistence that they were seemingly chill with them being there, we kind of morphed it around the story, and I really like how it ended up. So there you
go.
I wonder
why they attacked us the first one.
Are they called Watchers before?
No. Okay. They were called lurkers.
Called what?
In my notes, they were called lurkers.
Yeah, we
and they were
going to
be hiding in the shadows of the rooms. And as soon as you were going to turn off the light, which is why I kept asking if that's what your plan was, they were going to attack. They are incredibly intelligent and pretended to be less so. But then you guys kept spinning up these theories, and I really liked the idea, so I changed it because it was really cool. Who knows? You may see the true lurkers someday. Last time, you descended down the hatch through the ladder, and upon reaching the bottom floor, you met with a large, empty room with a singular button and a watcher in the southwest corner of the room. Dara saw some writing on one of the stones to the north and received a fairly prophetic and spooky message about how this place would twist your soul into darkness. In time, the group moved through this room and discovered themselves to be in a strange forest where they saw a much younger Dara growing into a sapling. After considering their options, Dara moved forward and attempted to free themselves from the tree, triggering the flashback kind of memory to finish and a new watcher to appear. Moving forward, and they also received a key. The hallway they stepped into led into the Imerizian jungle, where Jinhai met with one of his old friends who he had harmed in the past. And he saw them happy and healthy. And as he turned back, he saw a watcher holding an empty glass. Moving into the next room, the group suddenly found themselves deep in Phandelver's mine, where they were tasked with destroying the forge itself, the event that threw Clushin across dimensions into this world. When they emerged, they found a watcher with a dull cube with green streaks. In the next room, suddenly they were in a strange land that none of them had seen before, with burning lava flows and a city held up by chains with crystal towers. Here, Quill had some shenanigans and convinced the followers of Hyria that he was their god. And in doing so has triggered a series of events that will be very interesting to see how it plays out. When you emerged back, you found another watcher holding an hourglass. You stand in this room, what appears to be a pantry of sorts, with five watchers in total around you. What do you do?
Well, next door.
Yeah, we've had enough fun here.
DM, which direction is the next one?
Wasn't it east?
You just came to the door to the east, which led to this pantry room.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think
there's another door to the south.
South, that was right, that's right.
Yeah, east and south. So I'll look at, I think it, who said the last thing? Who's the last to speak?
From last
actually,
time?
Yeah.
Actually, would one of you like to make a perception check in this pantry?
I can. Give me just one moment.
Or do you just one person checking?
You can,
I mean,
someone can help.
If someone wants to help, that's fine.
I will help, Dara.
All right. 17.
At advantage?
Because I'm helping.
Because STL is helping?
It's 15.
So 17.
Sorry. There was a lot going outside the game. Sorry.
Glancing around the room as the rest of the group is kind of turning to leave, you see, just for the briefest moment, something catches your eye in one of the barrels. And these barrels are old and dilapidated and kind of rotten through with cobwebs surrounding them. In one of them, though, just as you take one last look into the room, you find what looks like a long iron key.
Pick it up and look at it. I think I found another key.
Possibly one of the doors is locked, right?
I'm sorry, Clusion.
One of the doors was locked, right?
Yeah.
Early ones, yeah.
So I'm sure that this goes to either this one or the one to the south. Who wants to take the key and open up?
Didn't I do the last
I'll
one?
I'll try it. Why not?
Try it again? Yeah.
Sorry. Which door would you like to open? This is room 3, which has the locked door to the south. There was also in room number 1 on the other side of the hallway a locked door to the south.
We know the first key did not work in the first room.
Well, this key was in this room. Surely it fits this door, right?
There's no other way. Say there
we'll
one
just,
or the
I'm
other.
Just gonna try it in this one here.
Do sure. it.
You search around for a keyhole and you do not find one.
There's no keyhole here.
It just seems to be a smooth wooden door with a handle that does not open.
Wait, like the handle doesn't turn or the door doesn't open?
Both.
Curious.
Can I try pulling instead of pushing?
Doesn't change it. Door does not budge.
Maybe we need to backtrack.
I think that they don't call you Doro Farnay.
That's a good joke. I like that. That's good.
That is good.
Let's have an inspiration for that.
Sure.
Inspiration.
They can have inspiration for it. That's a good one.
Maybe there's an order here. Maybe let's go try the other door and then see if it works. And then if it does, we'll come back to this one afterwards.
Yeah, let's do that. We'll go across the hallway into the first room.
Are you moving back to the first room? After the button press, first room?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, I just want to confirm.
Yeah, if we can't get to the door, we would probably move south.
As you head west back through the hallway where you teleported into the jungles of Imerizia, you kind of glance up at the vaulted ceilings once more and you notice 5 watchers just spread out all above you, almost creating a shadow on the ceiling itself. As you pass the threshold back into the first room where the vision of Dara's forest happened, suddenly they're all in the corners and one in the very center of the room. You can see the door to the south. If you approach it and try the key, it unlocks.
Fantastic. Does it sound like there's anything on the other side?
Yeah, do we hear...
What... Yeah, make a perception check, Clusion.
And dirty 20.
Dirty 20? No. It sounds silent.
All right, I'll open the door slowly.
It opens with an audible creak, but as you're opening it slowly, it kind of softens it a bit. The first thing you notice is carpet rather than stone. The second thing you notice on the walls are that they are just lined with bookshelves, stretching out about 15 feet down the hallway to another door. Both sides lined with bookshelves. That's really it. Just bookshelves, floor to ceiling. Grayish in color rug spanning the length of the hallway and 2 wooden chairs on either side.
Does this look familiar to STL?
Somewhat. Somewhat. It is reminiscent to a certain style that you remember in a certain place.
Oh, shit.
Is there any smells? Anything that we can... Like, is there an aroma?
Going off of Clusion's perception check from before, the faint smell of smoke begins to fill the chamber, followed by the faint aroma of lavender.
Does that ring any bells for anyone?
Possibly. I go look at the shelves. Do they look like tomes that would belong in that certain place?
It's weird. As you approach the books, you look at the bindings, you look at the quality, and they seem incredibly high quality, non-degenerated like the rest of this place. It seems out of place. More so, the text is unintelligible. It's almost as if you're screwing your eyes and trying to look at it. It feels vaguely similar to dyslexia in that every letter is kind of in the wrong place, making it very difficult to distinguish what these books are.
Head to the door.
Sure. The door is taller than the first door and arched, and it seems to have metal braces along the center of it. Instead of a handle, it has a sort of cubic looking shape. Instead of the round doorknobs that you'd been seeing, it has more of a cuboid shape. And as you begin to like move your hand toward it, the cube lifts off of the door itself and begins floating just outside of your hand.
I will the door to open.
Sure. The cube kind of starts slowly spinning outside of your outstretched hand. And you begin willing the door to open, and you see the cube just slowly rise up and fit into an empty spot above the metal. And the door opens up with a long, winding squeal. And you feel cold. You can hear wind just filling the hallway now. Violently fast wind, bringing with it the chill cold of winter. You're almost blinded as you're looking through this doorway, as snow cascades all around you, creating a blizzard-like effect as far as you can see, which is not far in this blizzard. Snow covers the floor, and all around you is lost in the blizzard of white.
Sit close together.
I hope we don't see another Remoras.
Oh no, I didn't even consider that.
That's
I just did.
Rafarne kind of trips just a little bit, and he's like, my hooves have no traction in this fucking snow. What was that, Dora?
I was about to ask if you had ever been anywhere with snow. Like, have you ever been up north? Have you ever traveled?
I have not. I've mostly stayed around the sea. Mostly on ships or the roads surrounding the coastlines.
Well, welcome to my home landscape, then.
This sucks.
you get used to it.
Oh my God. As you step into the snow, the door behind you slowly closes. And it's not, like, disappeared. You can still see the gray stone wall with the door. But as you take a few steps forward, it begins to vanish just in the snow. Up ahead, you can start to see various shapes. They look like houses, shelters. As you walk closer, the crunch of your boots kind of filling the empty air around you. Just on the outside edges of your vision, you can see what looks like ocean, but this part of it is largely frozen. And as you continue walking toward these structures, you can see many appear to be made of wood or stone, and all of them have their chimneys, smoke billowing out the top, warm glow of fire inside. Estiel, you recognize this place.
This looks very reminiscent of the village he grew up in, then.
Yes.
I absent-mindedly make my way to the city center, where everything happened.
You walk forward, and the snow slowly begins to ease somewhat. It's still coming down fairly hard, but no longer blizzard-like. You can start to see the surroundings, and you can see who you remember to be your parents. Standing in the center of the village with the rest of you, who you presume to be a young Estiel, maskless, a child, afraid. You see two people begin moving out of a large building toward the center of this area. One of them much older than the other, the second figure you recognize, those who have seen her from the Lyceum when she visited Villamere, Nea. You see them engaging in some small conversation as Estiel's parents kind of take a step forward between their son. The village elder wrings his hands and warms them up and says,
"It's for the best of the village. I don't like it more than you, but after what happened... He sighs deeply and shakes his head. You see Nia put a hand on his shoulder and say, "He will be well looked after at the Lyceum. I promise you that." The parents begin to argue, at first with the elder and then with each other. His father seemingly afraid of his son, his mother vehemently against the idea of him going away. Suddenly the scene changes. You're no longer cold. You feel warmth. All around you, bathed in golden light and clouds. Golden structures. The most beautiful and perfect that you've ever seen. And sitting atop a small row of steps, you see an ever-changing being, beautiful in their nature and their makeup. She's telling young Estiel, a little older now, she's telling him her name, Seraphina. Her visage changes once more, but you don't feel confused. She simply is as she's always been. Perfect in that moment. Her visage changes again. Suddenly she's a young man. And yet again, he is as he has always been. It continues to change before resting once more on a tall, elven-like woman with long, flowing blonde hair, whose soft voice permeates the silence. She tells him to believe in her, to come to her in his pain. You see him raise his head, the tears openly falling, and he smiles at her. And suddenly you're falling. Faster and faster through the clouds. The golden light begins to dissipate. You find yourself sinking farther and farther and farther into the inky blackness of nothingness. And even now in this inky blackness, you can see Estiel as an adult. Maskless once more. Kneeling. Eyes open and wide, mouth agape. You're following his eyeline, and you can just barely see a shadow in the darkness. It unfurls great black wings made of smoke, and it says to him,
"I will protect you now, so that we may both survive what is to come."
See Estiel slowly shake his head. The scene starts to fade, but not before you see a thin pinprick of golden light reaching into the darkness. Finally, you stand back in the cold on a snowy mountaintop. In the distance, you can see the Lyceum. A large, gray, black, white building made of different bricks, different stones to accentuate different features of it itself. You see what appears to be a tall, slender woman with snow-white skin. Her hair is blowing gently in the wind, sitting on the edge of a rock looking over the school. You see Estiel sitting with her, mask on. Seems to be about a teenager again.
Welcome to what's been going on. Looks toward Orofarne.
I thought I had a rough childhood. Fuck. I thought I had a rough adulthood. Fuck.
I feel like I should make a wisdom saving throw, Marshall.
Sure.
Plus one.
Plus so one. Cool. Well, that makes the difference. As you say that, Orofarne, you glance back to Estiel and he looks shell-shocked. Just totally, like that faraway look that you'd seen at times when you were sailing with the Immortal Suns. That vacant stare. Of someone who had lost everything.
He puts his hand on his shoulder and kind of does like a little wrap around like to the side. And he's like, pats him on the chest. And he says, "Well,
come on, old boy. Are we just here to see things or does something trigger this one? What do you think?"
Probably her, and he gestures towards the figure.
Profarne then looks at everyone and kind of gives him a little push.
You see younger STL stand and kind of walk back toward the cave where he's fiddling around in his bag, seemingly trying to find a water skin for the woman.
Slowly approach. Sucked up quite a lot.
You see her just kind of staring off into the valleys below. Snow everywhere, looking incredibly serene.
Did anyone else approach with me, or did everyone stay back?
I'll walk with you, but I didn't want to ruin the scene.
I think Quill would go with you for protection, just in case.
We all know how you are. What I was going to say, STL, and Dara would have noticed the change in your face. They would have gone with you quietly as support.
This was always her favorite spot, just that.
Who?
Millie.
What's her significance?
Well, I look towards Lucian. The only person I ever loved.
When was the last time you saw her?
6 months or so ago.
And where is she now?
Somewhere I can't go. Looks towards the buildings. This is the Reno Lyceum. Did I pronounce that right? I don't think I pronounced that right.
In my mind, I just have it as the Noreo. Yeah.
I added an N. I thought I said it wrong. And I'm no longer allowed to come back here.
Why not?
The people we lost at the roost. Pardon me, the Eerie.
Because they died, you're no longer allowed to go back?
Because I was in charge of them and they died, yes.
I mean, excuse my comment, but that's fucking stupid. I mean, they joined your siege just as I did, through their own free will, right? And
free will is subjective here. I sure had plenty of free will, but there's many here that do not. The people who end up here are the ones that are a danger not only to themselves, but everyone around them. Thankfully, Millie wasn't one of them, but her sister was.
Dale.
Yes, Dara.
Why did we not see Millie when we went up to the Lyceum for her funeral?
That's a good question.
Because nobody looked for her.
All right, DM, I'm just saying. we only had an hour, but...
I think I remember asking if she was there.
I think you asked if she was at the funeral, which she wasn't because she was having to work.
That's right. And I absconded straight to the office.
Yep.
Oh man, I would have gone to see her. Now you can't see her at all. And now you're seeing her in a vision. Whatever this magic is. I didn't know you couldn't go back to see her. You never mentioned her before.
Now you know the weight of what Nia said.
That makes a big difference on how you were acting. And now it makes sense.
STL's going to pull something out of his pocket. I've been holding on to this for a long time. The intent to give it to her one day. But I feel like that day will never come. And on the stones beside her, in such a way that she would notice it, I placed down that, let me find it, that Tenefrig ring that I bought way back in the day.
Yep. It's funny as you say that. You see her head kind of turn. Kind of look toward Dara and kind of look through Dara. And then she just kind of cocks her head to the side and locks eyes with you and says, "So give it to me now."
I imagine Estelle's reaction is the exact same I'm having right now.
She can see him?
I thought, can you see me.
Her head kind of tilts again, and she says, perhaps more than you can even see yourself at times.
That's no joke.
Slowly stands and spreads an arm out toward the Lyceum and the snowy tundra around you all and says, you have a choice. You've always had a choice. What do you want?
Don't want to suffer anymore. Don't want to watch the people around me die in vain and nothing to say for.
She nods solemnly and places a hand on your cheek and pulls you forward and kisses you on the forehead. And she says, sounds like you've already made your choice. I pray that you find the strength to make it in your own world.
Is this the place where he came from? Or would he make that assumption at this point?
Fair to say.
Worlds be damned. Locks eyes with her.
Just kind of gently strokes your cheek and nods. And suddenly the scene begins to fall away. You find yourself reaching out as if to touch her. And instead your hand wraps around a curtain. Deep velvety curtains. The room is large. You can see a large sofa next to a fireplace with smaller leather chairs surrounding it. You see a large table in the northwest corner with six chairs. Books line the shelves. Curtains line the walls. The floor is covered in the same kind of dirty gray-brown stones as before. But in here, with the firelight, you see that the rug is a emerald green with golden stitching around the sides.
Are we all in this room now?
Anyone who stepped through the door is in this room now.
Okay.
So, yeah. I'd like to point out just a few seconds back, as soon as she kissed him on the forehead and brought him close, Orofarni grabs the back of Clusian's neck and comes in, and he's like, it's like he does a little fist bump, and there's actually, you see a couple small tears in his eyes, and he says,
it's fucking beautiful, man.
And he just stands there and watches the rest of the scene with his hand still, like, on the back of your neck.
She just, like, looks at you, just like, she's kind of like, well, I don't know that we're there, guy, but okay.
Why?
I think I need to sit for a minute.
Yeah, I think after that, we all need to take a seat. Quill, do you have anything on you? No, we don't have any food. Oh, I was thinking maybe we could give him something to help. Something to eat.
Pinhai still has his backpack of food.
You want to get drunk? Stuck.
No.
I meant like a cocktail or something. Something to take off the edge.
Yeah, there's something to kind of like, yeah. Smooth out the rough edges. Got a little red wine. You helped me make it, remember? It's near and dear to both of us. Maybe you take a sip and just... see, it's pretty good.
He would know. He tried it. I'm kidding.
Scanning the room, anything other than what you described, stand up.
You see a few. In kind of one of the darker recesses of the room, you can see what appear to be some cupboards. The room is mostly as I described.
I don't think we're out of this yet.
So what's next, then? There's something in here we need to find?
Was there a door? I don't remember.
Nope, this room has no doors except for the door to the north that you just came through.
Curtains and carpet.
There's six chairs. Are any of them gorilla-sized?
They're all roughly the same size, but they're, when I say chairs, I don't mean like straight back chairs. I mean, these are more like old school stools that you sit on. Maybe the couches and stuff have nice chairs, but...
I mean, maybe we all have to sit down?
Let's give it a shot, right?
Yep, that's what I would do. I'm gonna go... Go ahead, Clusion.
I'm gonna approach one of the chairs. It's not trapped or anything, right?
Make an investigation check. Oh, God.
I'm just gonna sit down.
I'm already sitting.
I rolled a 12.
Actually, as your fingers are sliding across the top of the chair, you feel a depression, and as your finger slides against it, a spike flies up. No, I'm just kidding. It's not trapped. It's just a chair.
You never just trust a chair, you know?
When is a chair not a chair?
When is a button not a
button?
When
it's a stool.
Oh my god.
So, if you're sitting down around this table, you'll notice one thing. The table is made of a darker wood than the chairs. The chairs are more of a pale wood. As you're sitting close to one of the walls in the corner here, you can hear what sounds like... Have you ever gone diving before? Whether that just be deep in a lake, just like jumping off a boat and going diving in a lake, or whether that be scuba diving or with a little snorkel or anything like that, just anywhere under about 5 or 10 feet under the water. It has that feeling of pressure around you, where it's just a little bit more than normal. It's not uncomfortable, but you feel that very strongly around these walls. And when you sit, the table before you, nothing happens, it's just a table. But you see each other, and some of you see sadness, and some of you see relief, and some of you see every manner of emotion from the others. The fire crackles in the distance, giving a pleasant warmth to the chambers, especially after the deep coldness of the mountains.
Everyone but Orifarne seen their past or present right now.
I'm not looking forward to it, I'm going to tell you right now. I don't know when his ends and mine is going to start, but I'm uneasy.
I don't think we're back into the main room yet.
We all left with a souvenir.
There are no watchers in here. As you say that, you look around. Yeah, as you say that, you're kind of looking around like, we all left with a souvenir, thinking like what STL's is going to be, and you kind of like glance to find his watcher, and you don't see any in this room.
Quick, STL, just start putting things in your pocket until we end up back where we started.
I didn't set the ring down because I got caught off guard. That's still in my hand.
Does it look just as you remember?
I'm assuming so.
Yeah.
Sure is.
Well, should we start turning the room then?
I suppose so.
What's there to turn but curtains?
Shelves, cabinets.
There's cupboards. There's cupboards, there's couch cushions, there's a fireplace, there's a rug on the ground, there's all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
There's a fireplace. Right.
The general turn, yeah.
Is there a significant amount of charcoal around said fireplace?
There's a decent amount, yeah. If you want to grab some.
While they're turning the room and searching for something, I'm going to cast Find Familiar.
Sure.
Casting it as a spell slot, so it's only going to be 10 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so as they're turning the room, you're casting Find Familiar. What are you guys looking for? Where would you like to look?
Any random item that sticks out. Cupboards, rug, couch cushions, the whole shebang.
Go ahead and make an investigation check, Orifarne.
12.
You start rolling the room, and you get to the cupboards. And the first thing that strikes you as you open up the cupboards is that there is a broken mirror. Like, you see the frame kind of snapped in half, and the glass just spilled all over the inside of the cupboard. It looks like it's covered in dust, It looks like it was kind of swept up and just thrown in here.
STL, come over here for a moment.
Yeah.
Does mirror look familiar?
It does. The mirror look familiar?
The broken mirror?
No, not that I can say.
And make an investigation check if you'd like, Chase.
Sure. Investigation 21.
World okay, that'll do it. You're looking at the pieces of this mirror. Despite how it was broken, very clearly it was broken, the pieces are fairly large. And you find within this cupboard the back kind of panel of the mirror that it was set upon before. And you think about the room to the south in room 3, where Clusion's vision took place. And you, with your amazing darkness visions, I'll say, could see something that the others couldn't in retrospect. Different patterns on the door that didn't really make sense or matter. It's slightly discolored panels of a door, it, you know, whatever. But as you're looking at this mirror, you're starting to piece together quite literally that this is the perfect shape for one of those miscolored panels.
I start going CSI and start piecing them together.
Right.
Put on your gloves.
No, I gave a jeweler's kit, so I can't do that. Never like the tongs and stuff from that, but I give that.
I would like to cast the invisibility, please.
Sure. Cast see invisibility in the room. As Marshall sees the spell. How do you cast it? What's your flavor for this?
I was thinking maybe we could flavor it through the diamond eye. Like, I guess they tap, yeah. They'll tap the side of their head, and you'll see kind of like a clear light that is round. It looks like a monocle, but it's not a monocle. It's just a round eyepiece. And they're going to look through that and scan the room for any objects or creatures
that you don't see any objects, but you do see 6 creatures.
Let me just throw up. Oh my god. What do these creatures look like?
You see 6 creatures. You see one that is holding a sapling and a piece of metal. You see one that's holding an empty glass and a staff. You see one that's holding a dull black cube with once vibrant green streaks. You see one holding an hourglass and a gear. And you see one that is holding a small ring and a silver thread.
I'll tell that to everybody. Where are they at in the room?
They 4 of them are in the corners.
Gross.
And 2 of them are on the ceiling in the center. Hanging and looking down.
Oh my god. I'm not comfortable with these things. So creepy.
I just want to be your friend.
Yeah. That's what I think of when the kayak like was in the corner.
So far, they're harmless. So
they're just looking.
Yes. So does... I think these would be the Watchers. They're hiding from us for some reason. Again, I don't know how to figure out this puzzle. And I'm not very good at puzzles. I usually look up a cheat.
So a silver string with a ring. That's
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, awesome, because you couldn't hear anything I was saying for like the last 5 minutes.
No.
Accurate.
So, Dara, you said they haven't had a thread.
I'm sorry, I was not coughing at what Clusion said. I was choking on my cake.
I was about to ask if you were alright.
I thought you didn't require sustenance.
Just being stingy. That's quite unfortunate. Wait, We're supposed to be bonding here.
You didn't have any food to give him.
Or
are you hugging all the cake?
Snuck some from Jin's backpack that we found and somehow made in this amount of time. It's chocolate.
I know, but in the past, see Dara just eating cake, being like, maybe we can find something to make him feel better.
The cake is a lie. You don't see the cake. So
that's right. It's an invisible cake. Only you can see it right now.
There you go.
You just see Dara just like miming eating cake, and you're like, what are you doing?
It was in the middle of the table all the time.
That's what happened when you sat down on the chairs. A cake rose from the table. Just right in front of Dara.
Only in front of Dara.
He said, happy birthday.
And all the watchers started singing.
Oh, God.
It's all an elaborate prank to get at Gavin.
No!
He just teleports into the room like, what the fuck?
Oh, my God.
Well, I was just in here having a nice fucking bath, and here I am now.
And he's in the bathtub.
The bathtub gets transported as well.
We're not going to see Gavek for a minute, no. I swear to fucking God, if this was Sarkis's plan, I will not let it live. No. All right.
Oh, geez.
The string and the ring.
The string and the ring. Don't ring a bell
string
to me.
String and a ring.
String and a ring. Do not ring a bell to me. Actually, none of them do. Unless they're supposed to symbolize something that we've already got.
They seem to be symbolizing everything that you guys have seen since you've entered here.
That's what I figured, but it's just a lot. Trying to piece that together is really difficult for me, so can I do a check? I need help.
What kind?
I will help.
I need to know what kind of check I would like to make to see if Dara could...
I need to know what kind of check you'd like to make.
A knowledge check to see if they will put the pieces together to solve...
That would be an insight check.
That's an insight. Okay, that's what I'm asking. Yeah. Yes.
Is it the same ring that he put down?
Yes.
I didn't get to the putting down it part. I got distracted because she saw it.
Right.
Well, saw me.
Yeah. That's
what we just need to find a string and we're...
What was your insight roll, Dara?
I didn't roll it yet. I was waiting. Okay. An 8.
I think STL said he was going to help you, so
I did.
I'm going to do advantage.
Thanks. Because
you
like...
said the thread in the ring, and I'm like, hello?
Yes. All right, let's go again. Oh, that's lovely. An 8. It moved. It hit the side. And then it rolled off a 20.
There's been a lot.
Before you answer that, Orofina is going to walk up just to Dara, and you're going to see a little bit of blue smoke emitting from his fingers, and he's just going to tap you on your forehead. And... Oh, wait, they already have advantage.
Mm-hmm. Do I? Mm-hmm. I don't get triple advantage?
Anyway.
I have inspiration. No.
You do have inspiration.
Could use with double jeopardy.
Retcon that shit.
Could use your inspiration.
I could. I just ate cake. Let's use it. All right. How does that work?
Just roll again.
You just roll one more time.
Wheat. Okay. Let's. It's not a 4. It's a 20. A 20.
Yeah, don't roll.
It's a 22.
There you go.
Good use of inspiration.
Was it a nat 20?
No, it was an 18 plus 4.
Okay. All right.
Yes,
no, you quickly piece together that these are items that symbolize the journey thus far throughout this area. This is everything that they seem to be carrying are things that are reminiscent to your character's past, presents, or futures. I'll say with your insight check, it'll apply to the mirror as well that you see SDL CSIing. Since he's helping you with the check, I'll say that, like, you're kind of helping him with that, probably. And you as well begin quite literally piecing together that this probably affixes to the door in the other room.
SDL, maybe we need to take the mirror and show it up to the door. Maybe it like, mirrors the lock, and then it will unlock. That sounded dumb.
Well, possibly,
that makes sense, though.
We'll also need to get out of this room.
That's what I'm wondering.
Door's still open.
The door to this room still open.
Yeah.
I thought we were no doors.
No, no, no. That's kind of
what I thought the whole time was that the doors were just open.
Listen to the recording. I had said there are no doors in this room except the door to the north that you just came from.
I misunderstood and I apologize.
You silly gooses.
So should we go back the way we came?
Once this mirror. Is...
See where it goes, at least. I mean, can't hurt anything.
Zooming back through. Go back through room number 4, the long hallway with the books. You see 6 watchers. Boom. Everybody sees them now.
Gross.
Room's kind of darker. Go back to room number 1. It's still dark in here. 6 watchers. Go back to room number 2, the hallway where you saw Jin Hai's past. 6 watchers vaulted on the ceiling. Room number 3, Klushin's room. With the old tables and this kind of like rest/eating area. 6 watchers. You see the door to the east still open that leads to the pantry. The door to the south still closed with the slightly miscolored panel that only STL can see in this superior dark vision kind of stuff. This beautiful, beautiful night boy.
Right.
No, I'll say you have the mirror fixed.
There was no door and no handle and doesn't look like it opens, right?
Correct.
I try to fix the pseudo-fixed mirror to said open panel.
You do so. And this room, if I recall correctly, had dim lighting from torches. And in the lighting, all of you, looking through the mirror, can see mirrored on this doorway, to the north side of the room, in the mirror anyway, an open doorway, an arch, with no door that leads into a hallway.
Real quick, I just want to say, I assume this might be for me. I don't know. I don't know you. You don't know me. Let's try not to pass any harsh judgments. I don't know what we're going to see. Just full disclosure before we go in there, please.
You literally just watched my whole life's journey.
Yours was very sad. Mine is a little risky in certain situations. So.
You did die.
So did he.
Fair.
All right.
Well, that's fair. Let's go.
Let's go.
Okay. Where are you going?
I'm just going to touch the mirror surface.
Still glass. Silamir.
Backpedal to where we see that opening in the mirror's reflection. Not taking my eyes off the mirror. And then once I feel like I'm in through said doorway, I turn around.
Sure. Yep, that'll do it. The rest of you following behind?
Mm-hmm.
Of course. How are you going through? Head first or looking back?
Well, if I turn around, do I see STL with an open doorway? Through an open doorway?
You do not. You see him vanish through the stone.
Fair enough. Kick around and I go back through it. Like backwards looking through the mirror.
You watch Orifarne disappear. The rest of you follow suit? Or does anybody try to just enter straight on?
I'm going to try to just walk through straight on, but I'm going to put my hand out so that I don't just hit my face on the wall.
I was about to say, I'm behind Klushin. I'm going to see if Klushin can go through.
Your hand definitely catches on the wall.
Entirely, or just like a hitch?
Yeah, entirely. Like your full force of body just stops.
If I turn around, look at the mirror, do I just like fall through?
Yep. Exactly. Oh. Like that. If your weight's on it, you slip and fall in.
That was tricky.
Okay, I'll do the same.
Sure.
But not as falling. Not as ungraceful.
Okay, you make it through. You're in a hallway, just a hallway this time. At the end of the hallway is another door. It opens, and you stand inside of a circular room with red carpets and one kind of like small chandelier hanging from the ceiling. The entire width of this room is maybe 15 feet wide, and it's just covered in mirrors. Floor to ceiling, different sizes, different shapes. All around you, just mirrors.
What do we see in those mirrors?
Everybody sees something different, something of their own life, a happy memory, a sad memory, a moment of love, a moment of hate, fear, death, and then it changes. And the images in the mirrors begin to kind of move and sway until it almost looks like a painting that's being slowly, that the wet paint is slowly being dragged over with a tool. And they kind of smear and smudge until only a dark black is in the mirrors. And that black slowly fades into a lighter, still fairly dark, but lighter than black, blue-gray color. And you watch as it kind of rolls and heaves and pulls in and out. And the room is filled with the sounds of creaking and groaning and gulls, seagulls.
I was like, gulls? Girls? Gulls.
Gals.
Gals.
You begin to see the livery of the ships, the white flags with the golden sun emblem with red rays coming out of them. You recognize them, Orfarne, your old pals.
All right. We're aboard the Claymore. It feels like.
Your ship name? Your yep. ship? Someone else's ship?
Oh, possibly.
Anything we need to know?
Well, I was a part of a privateering vessel, a mercenaries guild, a bodyguards guild called the Immortal Sons. We had a small fleet of ships along the Claymore, and like I said, mercenaries, bodyguards, butt heads with the Queen of Stallbrook quite a handful of times. Armed a few of the small island nations to fight against the tyrannical bitch. We're not the best friends. But these guys were... They're a second family, but essentially they were my first family.
See the image in the mirrors. The ships beginning to sail. All the sails come down. Full speed ahead. It almost seems like it's a camera that's on a track, shifting and moving, and suddenly the camera's on an island, just watching through the mirrors. And you see Orofarne standing on the island, alone. He looks fairly pleased with himself. Seems to be carrying a few things that he's trying to offload here. The scene follows him into town in quick kind of bursts. You see him going into the market, replenishing on some supplies, ordering things for the ship once it comes back around. You see him flirting with different tavern girls, being a bit of a player. The room is beginning to fill with the chatter of the tavern. And you can hear somebody talking very loudly and excitedly about the Kidori, about how they've returned. And certain organizations and groups are seeking volunteers, men, women, whoever they can find, to help fight. You hear many different names. Only one of them you recognize, the Emerald Order.
Are we invisible?
You're just currently standing in the room, watching the mirrors.
Okay.
The scene begins to shift once more. You can see face down in the sand. Orofarne, injured by the looks of it, not gravely so, but injured, left alone. You can see splintered fragments of a ship in the background. A woman is walking down the beach. Beautiful woman. Holman, how would you describe Valina?
She was a tall female elf, yellow tan skin, maybe in her 70s or 80s. Mature, but not old for an elf. She had hair the color of like sand of the beach, and just always had a big smile on her face. She's always kept a blue ribbon to pull her hair back, and wore dresses with like floral print on them. Is she alive? Walking away?
She's not. Walking away, it's... You watch And this figure is walking toward Orofarni.
And there's... That, right?
No.
No, in the
one that's on okay. the beach.
Okay.
Yeah. She seems to be walking toward Orofarni with a smile on her face. She's got something in her hands. Too small for you to see. Something clenched in her hand.
Is this Orofarni as we have seen him?
He looks a little different. Mm-mm. Looks a bit different.
He doesn't have the obsidian.
Right.
Okay.
You see Orofarni just slowly sit up on the beach. And the woman closes the distance and kneels next to him. And you see Orofarni in the vision just look up at her and start sobbing. You see him reach for her face and begin to push her hair off of her temple and just slowly drag his finger along her cheekbone. And as he does, you watch as she collapses into the sand, bloody and broken. And you see Orofarne's arm just sink into a puddle of black goop and fall to the ground. His head covered in black goop, and slowly it reforms to form the obsidian arm and face that you see before you. And you watch yourself prostrate yourself into the sand, burying your face, hiding your tears, as you lose the one you loved again.
If you guys look at your Orofarni, you see he's standing upright, like he's forcing himself to stand up proud and composed, but you see his fists are as clenched as they could. On his left hand, his nails are actually digging into his palm, and you see a little bit of blood coming out, and you see his eyes are just like completely filled with tears.
I'm gonna put my hand on your shoulder. Let it out. It's better.
He just bows his head and starts sobbing.
I'm confused.
And then looks up again to see what's next.
Orofarni, I'm confused.
The sands shift. As he buries his face in them, it does a bit of a zoom up close to the sand and his hand buried in it. And you watch as the camera pulls back. And the sand, he wipes one of his obsidian hand with his real hand. Kind of wipes away the sweat. He's standing now in an arena. Before him is a mountain of a man, wearing a half golden breastplate, an enormous greatsword, and a helmet far too small for his large head. And he's looking down, taunting Orofarni. You can't hear what he's saying. It sounds largely unintelligible anyway. You just see Orofarni just slowly wiping the sand from his hands, reaches back for his own sword, and begins to steady it. You watch him leap forward into action, engaging this large brute. The crowd all around begins cheering, drowning out any of the other noise that you could hear. As the fight rages, it's clear that Orofarni is going to lose. The crowd begins screaming, blood, 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 blood. And the big man raises his arms wide, grasps his sword for a killing blow, and begins to snake it down. And as he does, the image of Orofarni disappears. And you see him standing behind the giant. And he shoves his great sword through his abdomen. The giant falls. You see Orofarni rip the helmet off of the giant and hold it high. The crowd goes silent, and what appears to be a frail old man begins walking onto the center of this gladiator pit. As he moves forward, you see in his hand a broken sickle, and he holds it up to you, Orofarni, and you see flames sprout all around it. Orofarni in the image takes the sickle in his own hand and holds it high to the heavens. This is a prayer to Uwantu. And then the mirrors change once more. Back to reflecting what's in the room. And as they do, you hear what sounds like a click. And you can see a large mirror facing the northern wall, slowly slide, revealing a dark room ahead.
Oh, that's probably our cue.
Are the watchers in here?
They are not.
You do.
What's that?
Did you kill her? Is that what we saw?
No. That was some vision showing me her death again.
But you touched her. It's not my hand. It's not how it happened.
No, it isn't. But she did die. And so did I. And then I came back. But she didn't.
Dara's just going to silently look away, a bit ashamed that they would accuse you of that. But they were
my
just...
hand's still on your shoulder, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Again, it's what they saw. They wouldn't know the difference.
I don't blame you for taking things that you didn't experience at face value. I feel like that's probably what you all think. His voice is still shaky.
It's all right.
Is that your only questions about what you saw?
I think that would be good to ask another time. I don't think that it's right to ask you too many questions after you just witnessed your love die again in front of you. It's a bit insensitive.
To be honest, I haven't really had the chance to process it much yet. It was wake up on a beach, set off to Anubia, and find the Siege of the Roost, and now here we are. Not really taking any time for it.
Did you find that adventure helped distract you and make you feel better about everything that had happened?
Can't say that it has yet. Distract me, maybe, but not near closure. For me, I think closure will come with death.
It doesn't have to, but if that's your course of action to have a hero's death, then you know that I have respect for that. But I actually lost somebody that was near and dear to me recently as well. And I was having a really hard time. So, if you ever need any advice or
thank you
help with coping.
But unfortunately for my Valena, I'm not one to go down easily. And I have new questions that need answered before we meet each other again.
Time is the most important thing, especially when you're a Garuda like myself. Didn't you say that you were 55, around that age?
Yeah, 55.
Well, I'm only 8 years old. But I don't have that much longer to live. Maybe 17, if I'm lucky, 18 years. Not a long time. And that's not to say that your situation is easy, but time is so powerful because it can heal, it can destroy. It has everything to do with what you choose to do with the gift of life and time.
Quill, you have no idea just how much that resonates with me. Thank you.
It's very wise, Quill.
Very profound.
More and more like your father every day. We're with you, Orfane.
Well,
let's step four together.
Thank you. You see him give like a big clear in his nose, and he kind of slaps his face a little bit and wipes his tears and wipes them on his chest piece and walks on.
All right.
The room ahead is quite large. There is no light. Those of you with dark vision can see 7 watchers.
Gross.
One with a broken dagger, one with a sapling and piece of metal, one with an empty glass and a staff, one with that black cube with dull green streaks, one with an hourglass and a gear, one with a small ring and a long silver thread, and one holding a flaming sickle.
Do you think they want this to do?
You hear the voice of the lore keeper enter the chamber. And he says,
"You must kill the past to allow present and future to truly exist. And yet, if you focus entirely on the future, you rob yourself of the present. And worse, if you only live in the present, you have no past or future. What will you do?"
It's as I said before when we'd first met. We will adapt together.
And fight fate head first.
You see 2 lights come on in the room. An emerald green light behind the watcher with the hourglass and the gears. And a gray light behind the ring and silver thread.
Shin looks around and he's like, "We'll learn from the past and apply it moving forward." And he looks at the watcher with the cube.
You see Klushin kind of like uncertainly, like cutting eyes, looking around and says it. And yeah, whatever, a brown light begins to shine behind the cube.
Like, he's kind of like, "Am I supposed to be talking to somebody in particular?"
That's where I'm wondering, is I look at the one with the sapling and the metal thinking, are we supposed to kill these physically? Or are we supposed to grasp the light?
Jinhai is going to turn and say, because I rolled decently, he's going to turn and look at the one with the empty glass and the staff and say, "I choose not to destroy my past, but learn from it. After all, life is an adventure, and all we can do is learn and grow stronger and wiser." As he says that, you see a pale green light begin to emerge behind the watcher that's associated with him.
So thankful you didn't say chocolate.
What?
What?
I thought he was going to say life is like, and I was like, no. Don't say box of chocolate.
I've never seen that movie. Dara's is still unlit, as is Orifarne's and the one with the knife.
I said I looked at it.
That doesn't mean anything.
I said
you looked at it and thought.
I wondered if I needed to kill it. It said to kill the past.
Dara, the lesson is that the best is yet to come, and if we feel that our fairy tale endings are behind us, or if we're looking forward to our fairy tale endings and not focusing on the road ahead, then we might not be on the right path. It's about focusing on what is in front of us, and also paying attention to our experiences past as well as those that are coming ahead of us. Because the best is always coming. And he looks over.
He watches a golden light emerges from behind yours.
Yeah, I don't get it out of character. I don't understand what's going on. This is not being
the lessons that you've learned.
I understand the mandala effect. Like I just said, I don't.
We're not talking about the mandala effect.
Yeah, I don't.
The lessons that you've learned throughout this experience, or just inspirational quotes about how you're going to keep going as a team, is what's been said so far.
Okay, I just like Gavik always said, "Life was
Gavik, no, no.
You would always turn to Gavik in moments of needing profound quotes.
Gavik would say, "All right, listen, you fucks. This is how it's gonna be, and this is how this is gonna go."
Gavik would have already shot him.
I think that
God killing
is really struggling with this because they have two pasts and they're always blending together. But they understand that, like, what they've been doing and learning with Zelos and where they've been with now their new companions for the past year, that things are changing and maybe they might be able to change the world with them, since teamwork has done very well the past year for all of them. There's my 2 cents.
There it is!
Did you say anything out loud, or did you just think that?
I said it out loud to skip the problems of that.
Okay.
I'm very tired. I'm sorry.
You see a silvery green light begin emerging from Daris. And then lastly, the one with a knife, you see this dark purplish black light begin to fill the chamber. And the chamber melts away. You're encompassed in purple energy. And you're standing before the Lorekeeper on Walaka. The room is not how you remember it. It's not collapsed in any way. It's still put together. Not a stone out of place. In fact, if anything, the room looks a little smaller. And so does he. He's not the giant that you saw the first time. He's maybe 10 feet tall. Sitting on a plain, simple throne. No adornments, no accoutrement. Visibly wearing the same as he was before with his toga. Still a small owl now under his hand.
There's no owl statue.
It was never a statue, it was an owl.
It was an actual owl.
Yeah.
Oh.
It was a large owl.
Oh.
Yeah, and now it's a small owl.
Okay.
And he's just staring at all of you.
So, we passed your test. Can you explain what the Watchers are?
He kind of slowly raises his four-fingered hand, his palm out, fingers rising in the air. And in a voice that doesn't shake the room this time, says,
"They were you. Another place, another time, perhaps, but they were you. A reflection. Different version. A distortion. Versions of you who perhaps have met a terrible fate, desperate to..." You see like a very faint smile appear on his lips. "Attain the flesh that they have long lost." However, they're not aggressive by nature. Well, not unless you attack them first.
We kind of gathered that much.
He nods. "You came here seeking answers. I fear that I know which answers it is you seek. And I caution you. You know what will happen if you enter that room."
Estiel nods.
Estiel, what does he mean?
He means that the room that holds the information of where the Akai that are on the area around us in Ganesi. And if we attain that information, we will become prime target number one to the Betrayer God.
Oh, angels were not fun. Wiggles hands in the air. Angels.
We've grown much stronger since then, but I'm not sure if they have followers in their legion that are more powerful on average than the ones that we fought before.
I'd be willing to bet that they are.
Want to find out?
We could find information in a different avenue, I'm sure, but you all wanted to know a shortest route. Well, this is it.
He sighs a deep sigh.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Quill.
I was just going to say, that's what we're here for. So we need to go through with it.
He sighs a deep sigh and says, the Akashic Records. That's right, we made that fucking pun. The Akashic Records that you seek are found below. One of my assistants will take you to that room. However, I have been met by one who can see many different timelines. And they have shown me what has happened once before. Know that in doing this, you will bring the wrath of the usurpers down not just upon yourselves, but all of us here in the Grove.
The Grove will be in danger if we do this.
No.
I don't.
He shakes his head.
This is smart.
Shakes his head and says, no, the Grove will be destroyed.
With all due respect, and I sincerely mean that, the world is already at the highest possible risk it could be. I mean, the Grove is going to be destroyed in coming months or years anyway. We will die in months or coming years anyway. We could look for other avenues that may not be as effective, but it's a balance. We can get the records. We can try to accomplish our goals faster, but people are chasing us. Gods are chasing us. Or we could risk not accomplishing our goal in time and the world ending. And that's what we're facing.
Oh. He kind of curls his other hand, his four fingers around one of the arms of the chair, pondering, and says, all things will go with time. You, your friends, the loved ones in our lives, the very world itself, things will go according to their nature. It is the cycle of life that all must die. It is a universal truth that cannot be avoided. I am not afraid to die. I am afraid for the world that comes after, with no knowledge of who they once were, doomed to repeat the mistakes.
I remember fragments of the records. Not enough to be concrete. But we do know that there's at least one living god, I suppose is the term, in the Venubian desert that has that tournament. We know of him. Without repeating the cycle.
You know of a god in Venubia already?
Well, he calls himself one, so I don't know.
It's a shot in the dark. That might be a place to start, and if we don't naturally get clues in a decent fashion, then we come back here and read the fucking scrolls.
Seems that's the option.
I think the scrolls should be a last-ditch effort. There's no need to hasten the destruction of this place or ourselves, especially given that we believe we're the ones that's supposed to stop this whole thing. The destruction of us would just assure the fate of everything else.
Well, what do you think?
As far as the Grove is concerned, it would be sad to see it go away. But this is just like our issue at Karth when we were talking about Slaver's Roost. The problem is that we have to make sacrifices. And maybe there is a more difficult path for us to go down in which the Grove can be saved and doesn't have to be destroyed and everybody can win and live happily. But, you can't please everyone. And if we're running out of time And this is our shortcut. Maybe just like Slaver's Roost, the Grove can be rebuilt. What do you think, Lorekeeper? Can the Grove be rebuilt?
Everything can be rebuilt. The knowledge that is washed away, however, will be lost entirely.
Maybe there's an option B. We haven't gained their attention yet. That means the knowledge could be moved.
How are we going to move? People here
could be saved before. But that would be...
Take it to the Eyrie for all I care.
That would require not necessarily abandoning the Grove, but...
The issue is that once the books are removed or the door is opened, the seals are broken.
Not those books. The rest of the knowledge here.
That would take an incredible amount of time and resources. It could be done, yes. It would take... weeks, if not months.
We don't have weeks and months.
Maybe like Clusion said, our last ditch effort is to gain the tomes. And if things are already in motion, if it comes to pass we have to read these, the loss is less.
So why are they going to be destroyed if we read them? Why is this? What is the reason?
Because the berserker gods, the betrayer gods, do not want to lose their standing and their strength.
I see.
They will rain down wrath and destroy the Grove.
So
and if they will pursue us.
That's still not answering my question. How are they going to know that we took it?
I can't explain that, Dara. All I know
Lore
is
keeper.
When...
Lorekeeper. How yes. will they know?
There is a seal placed upon the doors and the chambers which hold the books. Once that seal is broken, it will gain the attention of every divine deity, of which now the usurpers hold that power.
Is there a way to unlock it without alarming them?
The seal is broken. We have purposely made it so unwanteds cannot simply enter the room via magic. Imagine the greatest heist of all time, stealing the Akashic records. Unfortunately, it cannot be done. I know that disappoints you.
He just laughs at us. Who are you?
I like this guy. He tells us straight. Yeah.
It's Gavik just so annoying. Right, they don't have a backup plan. It's just we just seal these and that's it. And
our backup plan was not thought of. We did not have a contingency plan once the usurpers rose to power and sought to kill the gods. We were asked by said gods to hide these records from their eyes while they tried to regain their godhood.
But they have yet to not gain their godhood back. Because
he just kind of raises his eyes up and says, no. There is only one of the original Akai that has retained their power, and that is Iotin the Chronicler. Neutral in all aspects of the world, so they don't see him as a threat. However, he is neutral in all aspects of the world and will not help, even at my request.
I see. Okay.
Now, just out of curiosity, what was the plan if, in this reality, the Emerald Order was never created or founded?
It just kind of shrugs and says, it is a broad question with no simple answers. The Emerald Order is not the only group of individuals seeking to prevent the end of time.
Nor will they be the last. If the Emerald Order fails, perhaps another will rise. It is impossible to tell. I cannot personally see through time or timelines.
You said someone could. Only...
Yes. Who? I know only what I am allowed to see.
You only said that somebody could look back.
Who?
The owl just slowly turns its head to look at you.
The owl goes,
the owl says,
"Me?"
No, the owl does say, "Who? Indeed. Who?" And then it just kind of like skitters a little bit.
Is it you? Are you the one?
The owl turns to look up at the lore keeper, then looks back at you. Indeed. Who?
Well.
You're one cheeky bird. I love it.
Oh, if you could God. See a bird shrug.
Well, no, you can't. Just look at Quill.
That's a bird with shoulders and arms. No, you see him kind of, you know, like scrunch up and do like a head bob to simulate a shrug. Yeah. And the Lorekeeper says, what I am allowed to see in even the most gross misappropriations of neutrality. And just kind of gestures down at the owl. And the owl says, who? I simply show. You remember. The owl will answer Quill's question, though. The owl says, I can see many people trying to stop what is to come. In my opinion, it's all in vain. The world will end in time. Whether that be tomorrow or 10,000 years from now. Everything has its day. We can push against and fight against the fate of the world. Or we can embrace. A new Kalpa will form, and new gods and new peoples and new worlds will arise. Personally, and this does grossly overstep my neutral bounds, and the shackles that were placed upon me, so to speak, by the others when they made me the chronicler. I don't want to see the world end, and if not the Emerald Order to help fight back, who?
Wait, did who it indeed? Just volunteer?
I kind of thumb the necklace that's been in, you know, in full view.
Mm-hmm. Make an insight conclusion.
Fuck fate, I'm tired of being subject to its whims.
Got a 24.
It definitely did. Yep. The owl turns its head to look at USDL, and it says, blessed by those who can fight back. Blessed by those who seek a better way. Yes. Who? The Lord Keeper kind of gently strokes the head of the owl with a couple of his fingers. And the owl like shivers at his touch. And as it shivers, it kind of scoots a little bit again, and you can see what appears to be a black and turquoise blue chain wrapped around its ankle, anchoring it to the chair. And the Lorekeeper says, it is well and good to ponder what may be. Personally, like I said, I would love to see the world continue without the destruction of the grove and the knowledge of all of our histories. You say you know the location of one of the gods. You see the owl kind of jump and look up at you and say, who? Who?
Well, we were informed about a tournament in the Nubian Desert. Of somebody who was proclaiming themselves to be a god. And we were invited in a pseudo-fashion to take in said tournament.
The owl kind of pricks up a little bit. And it says, fighting. Tournament. Barokamuda. Venubia. The Kosic Desert. Yes. Yes. Who? Yes. And the Lorekeeper just continues kind of stroking his feathers.
You were invited to this tournament? You as a group, the Emerald Order?
In an indirect manner, yeah.
By someone who self-proclaimed themselves a god.
Well, I'm assuming it was one of their underlings they sent out to find fighters.
Well,
regardless of that, even if it's an imposter, then
you're challenged by the current champion.
You'd think it would draw the attention of somebody that is a god. They'd want to keep an eye on it.
Just to reiterate my story, I am on a pilgrimage that ends at that tournament. Sent forward by
you want to what?
God damn it.
I just look at the owl. I just look at the light.
It just like nods at you, understanding. The owl says, want to. It is understood. And it looks up at the lore keeper, and you can see that there's some kind of telepathic communication just via the way that their heads are kind of nodding as they look at each other in silence. And the lore keeper just reaches down and pulls out a large journal and opens it and starts writing. And then he slams the book shut and sets it back down. And the owl says, Uantu, Grail, the Akai. I had wondered. Seemed familiar in some ways. Though he is much different looking than he was before.
I think that's where we go. I think that, at least for now, preferably for the entire time we find another solution, we forget about opening the scroll room. I think that we have two people here who want to help and are, well, within... I don't want to make assumptions. We have two individuals here who seem to want to help and appear to be quite powerful in their own ways that have went to great lengths to show us how important it is to learn from the past and then to explain that in the past, our plan of action was met with failure. I think that we move another way. We go to the tournament and we see what's there, and hopefully we begin another trail that will lead to finding the gods that we're looking for.
You see the owl instantly start jumping and kind of spinning in a circle going, "Hoo! Hoo!"
It may behoove you to know, Lorekeeper.
Behoove?
In the past week or so...
Listen here, you little shit.
This is my favorite bird in the room. No offense, Quill.
There's your like.
Quill's just like. He turns his head over and like raises an eyebrow.
It just hasn't pooped in the bush yet.
It says,
"Who? You don't have eyebrows."
All right. STL. It may be Hoove.
In the recent weeks, we were able to purify Nemus and free them of their malevolence.
Yes, this little one here told me as such. Yes, I was quite surprised when I heard this. Hayeka has not, he's like sighs and like frustration and contemplation at the same time as he's searching for the words, and he says, she hasn't sought to help those outside of certain bloodlines in some time. It's good to see her actively participating in this uprising against Amira.
Secondly, with your permission, and I look at the owl, I have means of teleporting ourselves to a different location, but it uses Kristoff's strength. Would it be all right if I set the target location in the grove, in case something happens?
Kind of considers for a moment and looks up at the lore keeper, and the lore keeper looks back down at you and says,
you may set the location to the outer halls, yes. In the event that if you lead anything back here, we should have enough time to get this one to safety.
I can even set it outside if that would make you more comfortable.
It would. It would indeed.
The owl, kind of skittering again, very excited, is kind of like jumping and says, "Hoo! The man! The man! Mr. Flint! And begins nodding and says, Mr. Flint! Yes! Enjoy your trip. And go in safety.
Stole bells.
Hey, I got a question for our DM, actually. Quill's, he's a bird guy. Would he know what the owl, what its race would be considered in Genesee?
In Genesee, this is, best you can tell, it's a large owl. The type of owl, the species of owl that you could say, would be a celestial creature that is often associated with the realm of the gods. The species of owl is known as the celestial warhawk owls.
That's cool. So it's basically just a awakened or like anthropomorphic owl, not exactly like...
It has an appearance...
Not like a common...
Definitely, you know, not a common kind of thing. No. It's kind of taking the appearance of an owl species that usually appears in, like, sacred scriptures and texts.
Fair enough. I like it.
So it seems like we have a course, then. Yes? We set your teleportation thing to here, and then we head to the desert, right?
We'll probably want to stock up on plenty of supplies before we leave.
Whew, I am excited. I didn't think I'd be getting there this fast. You are so charming, we're letting him come with us. I would just like to say thank you.
The owl kind of like does a little hop and says, would that I could. I am bound to the grove. In this form, anyway. I have many other forms, but this form is bound here. Now, if you are leaving, who would like to use a teleport room? Any of you? Or would you like to fly? Or walk? Or sail, or go by steam, or ship, or airship, by steam!
Could we teleport there instantaneously?
The last time I went through the teleporter here, I was thrown through time and planes. I'd prefer not to.
Well, then, that's fair.
Which do we choose?
The Lorekeeper says, it does not matter to us what you choose. Only that you be on your way soon, as I, unfortunately, for all of us here, have many, many more people who wish to see me before the day's end.
We can make that decision and come back. I'm sure one of the stewardesses can help us.
Fair enough. Let's go make our decision and then come back and let them know. Would that be okay?
If you choose to teleport out, or if you choose to fly or find another way to Venubia, you do not need to come back. One of the stewards can take you to the teleportation room or escort you back to your weapons and supplies.
I was just thinking of the supplies as well. But I think we should discuss it for just a moment.
Thank you for your audience.
And he bows his head deeply. You see the owl kind of jump around and does a little spin, and then just immediately the light that kind of filled the chamber from the owl's like presence, you know, fades. And it just kind of slowly reverts its head, shifting back down, and the Lorekeeper pets it, and it almost looks like a statue.
Well, I suppose that's it then. Yes?
I think so. I think we can head out.
I've never seen magic like that.
It'll take some time to set this circle, so if you guys want to gather supplies, rations...
Do we need to go back across to the city to do that? I would assume that they don't have a whole market and everything here at Lord Keeper's Grove.
Yeah, you would have to...
Oh, we get to talk to the ferryman again.
Maybe. It'll probably be a different one. But,
don't
yes.
Don't you rob us of that.
That joy. So, are you heading out the door at least for this room? Okay.
Yeah, we head out.
We need our supplies.
As you, As you begin moving toward the large doors, they open inwardly. Chakotay. and you see the acolyte who formerly brought you into this room is opening the doors and escorting you out of the chamber. You see three people kind of walking up the stairs toward the Lord Keeper's room. You see what appears to be a tall female, kind of brawny, a lot of muscle on her. She's wearing a full breastplate, seemingly silver with ornate patterns and runes kind of etched into it. You see a dwarven man, very gaunt and thin, wearing long robes that kind of scrape against the floor, holding a staff and a book. And you see a 6-ish foot tall warforged with what appear to be lengthened ears kind of attached to the sides of its head. And it's wearing very strange armor, very smooth and polished, well fit into its body. And as you kind of pass by them, they just all like nod to you, fellow pilgrims coming to seek knowledge.
Are they mercenaries
or
anything?
They look like the sociable.
If you want to say something to them, you could.
Well, I mean, if they look like they're the sociable type and they're coming in here, I feel like maybe Quill would find them familiar.
In what way?
I'm thinking of episode 3, I think it is, where we left off last time with some like Warforged people who were...
Oh, no, these are...
Looking like scholars or priests or...
No, these are not any people that you've seen before. They're just random people coming in for advice on the Lord Keeper. They are sociable if you want to speak to them, though.
Well, if he doesn't recognize them as, those other people, then maybe he would let them go about their business as he knows how long it takes to get an audience with the Lord Keeper.
For most people, it takes a very long time. Yeah.
Are they wearing any insignia?
So, it's strange, right? The female and the dwarf, the female fighter-looking woman and the dwarven kind of wizardy-looking boy are both in kind of nondescript clothing. Like, and by that I mean there's no insignias, there's no logos, there's no emblems anywhere. There's no coloration schemes that you recognize as like a certain flag or anything. But the Warforged has a symbol on his chest. It's vaguely familiar. Only vaguely. It looks like a strange blend between Torvalin and Stahlbrook house logos kind of combined together into one. So you have this like six-pointed sun in the center with what appears to be some kind of serpentine head rising out through the center of the sun. And it gives you major like Stahlbrook vibes for the dragon and major Torvalin vibes.
Real quick, as they walk by, I'm just going to like tap him on their arm and say, chap, what's that brand you've got on you?
Kind of like looks down at you and taps your arm, the obsidian one. Just not aggressively by any measure, but just out of curiosity more than anything. And it's seeing as like you're comfortable with touch, he feels comfortable. Taps your obsidian and like feels the kind of glass of it. And he says,
"It is a symbol of my people. Long forgotten, perhaps, but I wear with pride."
"And who are your people, if you don't mind?"
"My people came from a strange place known as Oberyn long, long ago."
He kind of like turns and looks at Dara and says, "Though I doubt this one remembers. I did not either myself until our histories were read back to me. I'm quite proud of us, surviving in this new world and thriving. I aim to bring equality and justice back to this world."
"Well,
and what of this?" He taps your arm.
He flexes a little bit. He says, "Yeah, you all seem like a real hardy people.
my limited experiences, I'd have to say, might have to agree. This bad boy right here, not really sure. Searching for answers on it. Died without it. Woke up with it. That's kind of where I'm sitting at the moment.
It's a very interesting story.
It is.
I quite like that. I quite like that indeed. He kind of glances up and sees his partners at the door, just kind of looking back at him patiently, because I think you're insightful enough to know that this seems like a common occurrence for him. And so they're just kind of like waiting for him, like, patiently. And he kind of taps your arm again and says, what's your name?
My name is Orofane. And you're a stranger? Name. Thank you.
He just looks down at you and smiles and says, they call me Wraith.
And that is a badass name, I have to say.
Sure is, Mountain Ash. Look, enjoy your day.
I will, you as well. Best wishes with the Lorekeeper.
I'm hoping he can answer some questions. Good day. And he kind of rushes forward.
Yep.
Head outside, collect our effects. Orofarne, I know you haven't seen this, so, I mean, you're welcome to observe setting the location, but your discretion.
Yeah, sure. It sounds right enough, absolutely.
It takes some time. I'll be here for several hours. That's the only...
Well, I mean, I'd be happy to hang out for a bit, so long as the others get all the supplies acquiring done, sure. I mean, that is, as well, I know it really hasn't been completely discussed. It's just been touched upon and dabbed on. I think you all are right, people. And if it would be all right, we have the same course to travel, at least for the moment. I'd like to travel with you. And I understand with a guild as reputable and official as yours, just asking, you know, a stranger coming up and asking for, you know, let me join you guys. It seems a little outlandish, I'm sure, but I'd be willing to go through some sort of trial or tryouts of some sort if you don't want to count that up there. I mean, you've known who I am as a person, at least a tiny little fucking bit, but, you don't really know what I'm capable of in terms of keeping you all alive and keeping myself alive. Just to all of you, I'd like to join you guys, at least for a little bit.
It seems, based off of the most recent events, that you've already joined. We got to see some deep shit.
And you were at the Roost.
I was at the Roost. Okay. Maybe on our travels I can tussle up a little bit with somebody, huh? If we don't get into combat ourselves, yeah?
I look to Quill. I think that can be arranged.
He looks back over at you and says, yes, I do believe that can be arranged. As he slowly opens his eyes.
I do have one condition, however. No polymorph. No megalodons. That's just not fair. I promise. To any of you.
I have other means.
Not many of us could take a T-Rex on our own.
Guys, this is a really good place to end it for tonight. Next week, we will be back with more Chronicles of Ganesi to decide how the hell you guys are getting there. And go over some of your thoughts and what you want to do. And we'll see what happens.
Outro music.